I'd like to talk a bit about the Children's Handbook Project. I started with that because when I was in medical school, I, of course, had medical pediatrics as part of the education. And I realized that when we discussed pediatrics in medical school, in the class, there was a lot of a misunderstanding about education of children, about being a child, about having children, about the certain uncertainty of wishing to have children, about other ideas associated with that. So at some point I came up with the idea of starting a children's handbook, basically something that people can fill in themselves and add to, but also with a specific message to it, because I have this strong idea that in the society as we have now, there is something very much amiss in the way children are looked at and conceived and raised and basically accounted for in our society. So I'd like to speak a bit about this idea that I'm exploring with this children's handbook, how I came to start with it, the aim of it, what I hope that will come out of it, and most specifically how I hope that such ideas can change the quality of the culture, society and humanity that we live in. The children's handbook is essentially a proposition of looking at children differently, for looking at children from many different perspectives, specifically to have a lot of different professionals describe their profession, but in the context of how we look at children or how we deal with children, interact with children, raise children. One example is the notion of dog trainers. They have the idea that you need to feed or not feed a dog to make them compliant and to follow orders and in a way set aside what a dog might want to do and live to create something which is compliant with what people might want and like. So the well-trained dog is something that the people appreciate, but how does the dog appreciate a dog's life in that sense? A different kind of perspective would be that of the bulb grower. They use different strands of flowers and then combine them to bring out the best possible quality as they seek it for their specific business. And that was also the approach that was used by the pharaohs in Egypt, where the cousins and nephews were interbred so that they could stay along a family line and, of course, had to steer clear of the debility following out of incest breeding. The story of the children's handbook has a lot of perspectives. And the starting point essentially is that in the society as we have it now, there is something unnatural about the whole notion of children. The in vitro fertilization, the adoption plans, the abandoned children, the rape and pedophilia, the cost and finance, the reluctance of people to opt for children, or the obsessive desires of people to have children, all of it seems to be more cultural than natural. Most of it seems to be based on beliefs and ideals instead of the actual living of life in the human physical body. There's so many aspects to it that I'd like to limit the scope of what I present now by putting next to each other the biological and the, say, the social or psychological perspectives. From a biological perspective, child the rearing and development and having of children seems to be very simple and very logical. Every human body, as it is developing, at some point will have a shift in the relationship between the neurons and the hormones, which is called the period of puberty. The onset of puberty is marked by a timed change in release of molecules, specifically the so-called sex molecules, as a result of which women grow breasts and men grow beards. It is a secondary sexual marker which indicates that that change of the physiology of the body has taken place or is taking place, and that in sense that sense of maturity has been activated, due to which the children then become adult. And the main difference is that they go from an inherent infertility to a potential fertility in their body. In many societies, they do not understand that, or they do not respect that. The problem of pedophilia is essentially that people do not respect that there is a marked biological difference between the sexually immature being and the sexually mature being. And pedophilia and a lot of the mind control techniques which are being used in some groups of people are based on the notion that sexual behavior can be initiated at any time, but basically it results in a distorted sexual experience of the individuals involved, but also in society. And that's the reason that I look for the biological argument, which clearly shows that there is a, let's say, pre-sexual period in the life of people and a sexual period of life in the people. If you go by that notion that at puberty sexuality is turned on in the boy and in the girl, so that they become potentially a woman and a man, then that also means that it would be logical to at that time fully develop and explore what sexuality means. I already spoke about that and indicated that in the sexual experience there is this relation between the physical stimulus leading to a physiological response, leading to a neurocrine shift, leading to a change of consciousness, as a result of which in puberty, with the onset of sexuality, it would be logical that the boys and the girls start to have sexual experience. Of course, they need to have an understanding of the potential consequences, and there need to be a wisdom in being able to discern when they are in sexual training and when they are in sexual practice. And as you might know, essentially the lifetime of sperm is 3 days, the lifetime of an egg is 3 days, so there's a 6 day period in the month where conception could take place, but it is necessary to take into account that there is a possibility of spontaneous egg release in a female at the moment that the psychological experience is so intense that it essentially resets the physiology, and that it, let's say, spontaneously and on the moment activate the release of eggs from the oviduct into the oviduct from the oocyte. So it's not just that the woman can get pregnant in the menstrual cycle, but there is also the possibility for a shifted cycle as a result of very intense sexual experience. So taking that into account, there is the potential possibility for the boys and the girls to practice sexuality with each other, and in the sexual experience discover how the physical interaction leads to a psychological attunement with the experience of orgasm, and as a result the potential experience of telepathy, as a result of which they can have contact with the unborn. I know a couple of people who already had contact with the unborn before conception, during conception, or specifically in orgasm. And so that is the idea which I want to put into this handbook, the children's handbook, that the choice of having children is actually something which can be made with the children. Evidently, that means that puberty is then a period of sexual experience, and also the learning of the sexual interaction, which means the interaction between the sexes, which of course means the respect of the complementarity of the sexes. And essentially that is the period in which the boy and the girl realizes that they are only half human, and it's only by their interaction that together they can become human and create a human and continue the life of humanity. Because evidently sexual experience is individual, but the consequence of sexuality and the birth of offspring is something that is relevant only at the level of humanity, where humanity itself is an organism. So in that sense, the child is actually a member of humanity right from conception. And as I mentioned before, with a proper mindset and with the proper telepathic linking, the child already is connected with and experienced way before birth. This notion of the male and the female together contacting humanity or contacting the unborn, of course, changes the whole perspective on what it is to have children, because you don't have a child, you don't become possessor of a child, and the child doesn't become possessed by parents, but it is rather that from humanity another soul is given the possibility to incarnate as part of the humanity on Earth. And from that perspective, then the child is not something that is desired by either a mother or a father, or a potential mother or a father. And from that perspective, a child is always, let's say, negotiated with. People would normally call it a wanted child. But in this case, it's definitely that it's not just that the mother wants a child or the father wants a child, but that the child wants to be born with that father and that mother, and that there is actual psychic or spiritual negotiation taking place, in which the father and the mother together in their meditative telepathic union can connect with the child, and then can see if that child actually would be an ideal match for what they seek to do with their life as they live their soul. In that sense, for the child, it's not a blind birth that of being born with parents who are not awake to their soul and who do not understand that in the union between male and female, it is the soul that needs to be aligned, but also that the soul of the child to be born with those parents can be aligned with that. So in that sense, then the child and the parents are already teamed up before conception, or during conception, certainly after conception, before birth, and that contact between the mother and the father and the child can continue through telepathy in pregnancy and after. in many cases, people do not have that experience. And in many cases, people actually do not see that there is that connection between sex and birth, even though nowadays it is part of education and most schools have a curriculum in which that is addressed. But still, there is an inherent horror of sex, which was instilled by the Catholic doctrine, in which sex was in a way forbidden and needed to be strictly regulated by the church, except of course if you were rich, then the rights of sex were very different, and there are these examples of the jus prima noctis, that the landowner would essentially have the right to father a child, to sire a child, as they called it, in any girl who was getting married within that fiefdom. That essentially is a very low level of thinking, because it was based on the notion that the owner of the land was the bed stud in the stable, and that all the mares basically had to get their sperm from that sperm donor to ensure the quality of the flock or the tribe or the herd. But as history shows, the ruler of the land at one moment is replaced by another one, and the one who was the hero in one instant was the vile villain at the next. So there is no quality of breeding stock ensured by leadership, by whichever way it was achieved. Essentially, that could be regarded as a form of rape, because the desire of children of the one is not matched to the desire of the child of the other. And that, of course, is a whole section of the children's handbook where people need to realize that when that kind of rape takes place, it distorts society, because the experience of rape is perpetuated by the principle that hurt people hurt people. At the moment that this kind of distortion enters into society, it can sometimes take a very long time to get rid of it, in the same way that a garden which is in balance can maintain itself. But at the moment that specific weeds can grow, it can actually change the whole character of the garden. In humanity and in society, we have that as well. So coming from the desired and connected with child to the desired but not connected with child, we can then also go to the level of the undesired child. And the undesired child is all those cases where the male and the female are having sex, but they have no notion of the consequences of their sexual interaction in the potential of birth. That means that they're basically just busy having orgasm or sexual satisfaction as a kind of pacifier activity, which takes place a lot in many societies, as a method of stress release, which is also known with the Obono monkey tribe. They have a lot of sexual interaction, and any token of stress would already be a good trigger for sexual interaction. And it's been said that finding a tree with bananas already would be sufficient stressful to invite sexual activities. So sexual activities in itself is only part of the story, but there needs to be the understanding in the children at puberty already that sexuality is like playing with knives or playing with matches. It is playing with life, not and it's something that needs to be understood and learned before it is started into. In the normal societies, and say on the farmland, sexuality is always integrated in the life of the farm. The the people on the farm, they have sexual experience, the animals have sexual experience, the plant fertilization is the sexual experience. So the children in the natural environment are very aware that sexuality is part of the whole development of life. So they can see it, they can look at it, they know it's not for them because their bodies are not actively prepared or primed for that. And it depends on the wisdom of the culture how that sexual experience is turned into sexual knowledge and sexual wisdom to be shared with the children as they grow up, so that they know that when puberty comes, they already have the knowledge, they have the understanding, they simply don't have the experience. And then in puberty they acquire the practice, the learning, and the wisdom. In a biological setting, you would then have this balance between the onset of the hormonal swell, the hormonal surge of the sexual activation, the sexual awakening of the body, with the understanding of what that will mean and how to deal with it. There is the description of the island Truk, where at the onset of puberty the children would go into the longhouse, they would live together and they would experience sexuality with each other, and as a result know how they can match with each other. And as the story goes, they basically walk out two by two because they know where they have the best rapport with each other. There's much more to say about this development at puberty, and specifically this turning point between the individual human and the member of humanity as it takes place in puberty. Let me go ahead with this notion of the children that then come out of that sexual union, and first address a bit the notion of the alchemical marriage, which is that fusion between the male and the female, in which at the deep meditative level the processes of the male and the female start to synchronize, and as I've described in other stories, our body anatomy is essentially our body physiology, which is essentially the cell communication, which is in its foundation an electromagnetic atomolecular process in which information and energy intertwines. So at that deepest level, our body is a cloud of consciousness, and that cloud of consciousness is much larger than our body, and so it's logical that in the sexual experience, the alchemical marriage can take place, that the male and the female cloud of consciousness merge, and as with stereo loudspeakers, open the space for a wider and larger and more dimensional experience to fall in place. As I mentioned before, the contact with the unborn in part of that, but also afterwards the connection with the unborn as the born is part of that. In the Chinese tradition, there is this understanding that from conception to birth, the telepathic contact with the child can already be fully developed, as a result of which the mother and the father can telepathically communicate with the child about what's happening in the environment. Because it's evident that the child in the womb can feel a lot of what's happening. And there's a book called An Unborn Child Tells Its Story. An ongeboren kind vertelt. And it is essentially the story of the baby, about what the baby feels and what the baby senses and how the baby can pick up on strong events in the environment, but also strong emotional experiences of the mother and the father, also at the distance. So the Japanese culture knows that and uses that and already starts to communicate with the unborn in the womb to help them understand what's going on in the life around them. So in that sense, they get telepathic subtitles to the emotional experience that they have while they're in the womb. After that phase of the life in the womb, there is this turning inside out of the womb. The womb can expand no larger, so it starts to contract in a pulsation which essentially is the same kind of pulsation as that of the menstrual contractions for cleaning the womb. In that sense, the womb is turned inside out, and in this vortex movement, the baby is then born and steps from one kind of reality into another. First, the baby was connected to the placenta in the mother of, in the body of the mother, and then the soul is connected to the body on the earth as the environment that we live in. From that moment on, there are a couple of stages which are very important in the development of life. And the first cycle is known as the Saturn cycle of the four stages of development from baby to child to adolescent to adult. Those are four periods of 7 years in which the first 7 years is focused on the development of the body. The second 7 years is the priming of the development of the mind. The third 7 years is the initiation of the development of the soul. And the fourth 7 years is the commencement of the fulfillment of the spirit in living on earth. There is a very interesting parallel in those four stages, because they are like two half cycles. Had the four elements of these baby, child, adolescent and adult cycle, the Saturn cycle, which has 28 years, correlates to the lunar cycle of 28 days. Astrology is quite clear on the way these correlations can be understood. And in that sense, it can also be seen that the waxing of the waning of the moon and the full moon and the new moon can be understood as part of that cycle. And in that way, the waxing and the waning complement each other in the lunar cycle. And in the development of the human from baby to child, and then to adolescent to adult, there is a complementarity as well. As I mentioned before, from the biological perspective, it would be logical, biological, that when the sexual activation of the body takes place, that the sexual activation as the engagement in sexual activity takes place as well. And that, together with a social wisdom on sexuality and the sexual interaction, and the children go into puberty with the notion that they are then learning the sexual experience, as I mentioned before, the awakening of consciousness and telepathy, but also that they are very well aware how they can choose their sexual partner and their life partner, and that they are likewise very well aware that sexuality and conception and birth can be very closely connected, which would also mean that in puberty there will then be a pregnancy which is initiated, as a result of which 9 months later a baby is born, as a result of which there will be this development of 7 years of the development of the baby and learning of the body, then 7 years of the development of the mind, 7 years of the development of the soul, 7 years of the development of the spirit, and so on. And then suddenly you can see that there is a complementarity, because while the individual goes from childhood to puberty, then in puberty that is a very logical period to then have this sexual focus, this sexual experience, this sexual consciousness and this sexual awakening taking place. But as a result, also with the wisdom of the tribe, the consciousness that can lead to the birth, the connecting to the unborn, the decision to conceive, and the decision to start a new life with a baby. And then the adolescent, who is in a way seeking to define themselves in the confrontation with the borders and boundaries of their limitations, with the capacity to transcend those own limitations by complementing with other people, so that together they can do and be more than themselves, as is seen explicitly in the complementarity between male and female. And that the adolescent then doesn't have this experience as the Western culture has it, that they need to break out of the limitations and restrictions which have been imposed on them by the parents and the society and the culture in babyhood and childhood, but that they can redefine their own definition and do that together with others. And it is then very logical that they would be able to define themselves from the understanding that there are fundamental needs that need to be met and that need to be provided for, which would be normally naturally seen in the care for a baby. In French there is this nice word game which applies to that phase, which about soin et besoin. Besoin is the word that describes the need, what do you need to live and survive, and soin is the word for care. And that phase of puberty where the adolescents are caring for a baby is this direct complementarity, because the adolescent realizes that it is possible to do more than they have done before, and in doing so they also develop the capacity to care for themselves, but also they can develop the capacity to care for others. Just to show the relationship again, I discussed that elsewhere, in the development of the human, the baby is fully dependent. It needs the care of others to be able to live and survive. The humans are not born in a pouch like the kangaroo. They are not sheltered on the body of the mother like the little monkeys, but they do have that need that their food, their excrement, their sleep, and their vitality needs to be cared for. Once they have outgrown that phase, they go into the phase of the children, where they become self-standing. They can walk around, they can learn to walk, they can learn to talk. They already know how to do that, but they develop how to work with that. So as children, they explore the world, they explore their own capacities, they explore their own limitations, but they still need a sheltered and cared for environment. They can feed themselves, they can clean themselves, but they cannot provide for the needs that they require for their housing and their survival on Earth. In puberty, there is a transition from the dependence of the baby and the self-standing capacity of the child to an autonomy, which is then followed up with a sovereignty for the adult. And those phases of autonomy and sovereignty parallel the phases of the dependence of the baby and the self-standingness of the child. If you compare them next to each other, the adolescent and the baby, the adolescent is learning how to care for themselves and their environment. They are developing their autonomy. And the baby is a perfect focus for that, to see how care is always care for. And that it's not about taking care, but about giving care. That there is a further development in the quality of giving care, and that the child, as the baby, is then the focal point for that. And likewise, when the baby has developed from dependence into the child level of being self-standing, that is where the adolescent has already progressed into the level of adulthood. And at the level of adulthood, which is where normally the sovereignty would be developed, that you need to be able to determine your own life, that you need to be able to make these decisions for yourself, that you are capable to respect the decisions of others, and that you're also capable to respect all of the life forms and all of Earth. And it is only logical that when somebody enters into adulthood, if at that time they are also caring for a child, then all of these questions of the child and all of these quests of the child can then be seen from a larger perspective. The child lives that from within, and the adult then looks at that from outside. So in seeing how the child goes through all of these questions, these quests, and all these explorations and discoveries, the adult then realizes that all of these contexts have a larger perspective, a larger scope, a larger meaning, and larger consequences. In the child handbook, that is essentially a core of the story, that if people start to have children while they're in puberty, then their life is essentially a span of 28 years in which they first develop themselves and then secondly develop a child, or develop with a child, and as a result learn from the child. The child is their teacher as much as they give care to the child. And then once they come out of that 28 years, they've gone through the whole cycle. Their children are then in adolescence. They can go into that experience of sexual awakening, sexual consciousness, telepathic consciousness, the living with a baby. And the adult is then capable of applying that, what they have learned in babyhood and childhood, and then already in a way applied in adolescence and in adulthood. They can then take that into a larger context and go from caring for a baby and caring for a household to caring for their community and caring for the earth. That is essentially the core of the story of the children's handbook. But there is much more to the story, because at the moment we do not have this natural development in which adolescence and adulthood are paralleled by babyhood and childhood. But the biology of the process is in a way lost from the story, and so it is necessary to rediscover the story, and for that purpose the children's handbook makes use of a lot of different perspectives. The children's handbook is an invitation to people with different life experiences to compare what they experience and learn from life, to how that enriches the understanding of children and the raising of children and the interaction with children, and specifically the respect for children. As I mentioned, there are the examples of the dog trainer, in which it is clear that a dog needs a leader, but a dog needs also clarity, friendship, and care. The same for a child, but it is not so that a child can be compared to a dog. If you look at a dog, it is in a way the mindset of a child, but it doesn't get beyond 6 years of age. And in children, we really need to understand that there's a lot more development to it. As I mentioned, the development of the child as part of the family relates to the principle of the bulb grower, that as parents, you need to be sure of your own compatibility at the soul level, at the mind level, at the body level, and you need to be aware that any disease that exists in the family, you essentially do not want to propagate. That means that for you, the having of an offspring is not a logical choice, and you actually need to be wise enough to make that choice and realize that the choice you're making at that level is not for your own continuity of being, because by sex you do not continue to live longer. In sex you can have a happier and healthier life, but you still will die. And what does keep on living is humanity. So there is that need to stop thinking as a human and start thinking as humanity, for which puberty, telepathy, and the consciousness that is associated with that is then the starting point. But that also means that some people need to realize that as an individual, yes, they would like to have the experience of children, but from their body they know that what they would give to their children is dysfunctional. So that instead of passing on a disease to somebody else in a diseased body, from which you know right from the start that it is inevitable that this disease will be part of their life experience, and that it will hinder them, maybe even cripple them, and maybe even be a burden for the rest of humanity, then it's wiser to decide to not create a child with that disease, but to instead opt for the raising of a child of which the parents have died, for example, and to go for the choice of adoption. Adoption is essentially providing a home and the environment for those children who cannot otherwise find that. And of course, in humanity, there are so many people that it's always possible to find a home in which people, children, can have a wonderful place to grow up. There are many more aspects and perspectives on the growing up of children, and for that reason the Children's Handbook has a whole listing of different professions which are all relevant in knowing what will come to happen in raising a child, in the life of a child. So one of the people is the undertaker, basically adding the perspective that everybody will die. You do not know when that will be. It might be as an adult, as an adolescent, as a child, as a baby. Take that into account right before you start, and know, as the Romans say, memento mori, realize that we will die, so we need to appreciate life as we live it, and we should not put claims on life, but instead make the possibilities to have an ideal and optimal life every second of every day. Another part of the story is the astrologer, who can then explain that the life cycle, the organ cycle, the cell cycle are part of the cycles of nature, and the better you understand how these life cycles connect to the cycles of nature and the cycles of the season, the more you can play into them, the better you can attune into them, the more you can be aware that when the winter comes, you better have your reserves ready, or you better have moved to the place where the fruits are still hanging on the trees. And that likewise, at the moment that spring comes, you know when to prepare, what to prepare, how to prepare, and to put it in motion. There's the story of the school teacher. How do people learn? How do people develop? How, through the different stages of ages of a lifetime, is consciousness, awareness, alertness, and care developed, expanding, growing? And also the awareness, of course, that it does not help if you try to prematurely instill something in a child, which is not possible. One of the well-known examples is that potty training a child is not possible if the neuronal myelinization has not taken place yet. The notion that the baby should be potty trained cannot happen if the nervous system cannot actually conduct the signals by which the bladder control can be put in place. And actually, when people are potty trained by force and coercion too early, it most often means that they become incontinent rather early at the end of their life. So the child teacher is one of the sources who can help understand how these development in life take place. Part of the story is, of course, also the banker and the insurance broker. The banker knows how much it costs at every stage of the life, and how much a life in total can cost, will cost, for a minimum, for an average, for a maximum. And also, the banker is very well aware that nobody owns money. The bank owns money. So how can you provide the money and the costs for raising a child if you can never own the money? What alternatives can you find for that? A complement to the banker is, of course, the insurance broker, that you know that things can go wrong, they will go wrong. You can, on average, from the statistics of the insurance business, you can guess that a child will fall off a bicycle two or three times, might fall out of this tree one or two times. They might have a car crash accident zero or one times or more. And there's a lot of information of the kind of accidents that befall people in general. And of course, it's practical to have the listing of that before you start with the conception of a child, so that you know what you need to take into account, and that you can be aware that life is a risk. And risk can mean that there is a loss, which is where then the undertaker speaks of how people experience that loss, how people have to live with that loss, but actually that it is most often a loss that people experience as expectations, which they want, where they want to have something fulfilled by the other, instead of realizations in which they have the fulfillment of themselves. There are many other perspectives. There's the gardener, the permaculture gardener, there's the sailor, there's the navigator, there's the baker, the kneading of the bread and the waiting for the dough to rise up. There's the family doctor who knows what happens in the life of people. There's the pediatrician, or more specifically knows what happens in the childhood development, the childhood diseases, how unavoidable they are, and how survivable they are. Essentially, the book is a fun book in interesting stories about our lives and our life and our living and our possibilities, capacities, potential, and abilities to help somebody else live. And in that sense, the children's handbook is not just a collection of stories of different professions and how they pertain to the quality of our life, as we can see that reflected in the development of children while they grow up, but it's also an enrichment of the experience that there are so many different perspectives by which we can look at life, and so many different approaches by which we can share life with others. And of course, the most important aspect of all of those stories, of all of these professions, with all of these perspectives, is that those are just stories, and they are not recipes. They are a foundation for understanding of how we can deal with things, but we cannot impose them on others. Although all of these stories are part of the children's handbook, they cannot be applied to children. They just help understand what comes into play in understanding children, and the richness and the fullness and the wideness of the scope of the potential development of children. Because, of course, every child can develop in a different way, and every child can develop into any one of those professions that are described in the children's handbook. So when you give birth to a child, it doesn't mean that you have a replica, a clone of yourself. You already realize that there's always two parents, so the child is not even the replica or the clone of the other parent. It can be a match of the two, it can be a mismatch of the two, it can be a totally different entity that is being born, which might go in a totally different direction. How do you care for that? How do you deal with that? How do you understand the difference demands at the moment that you realize that demands of the child are actually not met by what you can provide? Are you able then to realize that perhaps there is somebody who would be better or wiser, more able, more competent to help this child grow up? And that you would have either a society of people around you as a result of which the child has more parents to choose from, as is well nicely described at the start of the book by Aldous Huxley called The Island, where children select multiple parents to grow up with. But it could also be that the child or the parents are in combination and with the society, they decide that actually the child would be better off to grow up with other people. That there is a change of parent, and you could regard that as a form of adoption. And in that sense, it could also be the case that children would go from one adoption to another, because essentially their school of life is that they need different teachers. And that means that they go to a different class, a different family, different village, different culture perhaps, to learn that next phase which they seek in their life, and to do that together with people who fully understand that. As I said, the magic of child rearing is that there is a mirroring between the parents and the children, and in that sense, one of the quotes I often use is that there is no mirror as hard as your own child, or as a child, because the children will simply reflect what they see, and most parents too late discover that the children will not do as they say, but do as they do. That sometimes for the parents is quite a shock, that they suddenly start to realize that what they think in their consciousness is not what they act out from their unconsciousness. And children then do reflect that, and that's also where the parents then actually learn from their children, and that the child is the school for the parent to further develop. And that was also my reason for making that a strong point in this children's handbook, that learning from children can best be seen if we juxtapose the development from adolescence to adulthood with that of baby to child, as I described before, once you see the parallel, the complementarity in that, you can have an acceleration of the development of the child and an acceleration of the development of the puber and the adult. As we see it at present, in the absence of this children's handbook, people are just doing a guessing game of what could or would they do next. There is no reference to the biology and the sociology of the process, and the result is that many people are not busy raising children. They're active with a job, they're active with a career, they're active with something else. And this culture has tried to speed up the development of the children by education and cultural programming, but the result is the opposite. The result is that most people have gotten stuck in adolescence. They are working for money instead of developing their own autonomy. They are slaves of a government instead of being sovereign beings. So a reset is necessary, in which the children's handbook is simply an invitation to rethink what we are living in society and our cultures, to reconnect it to biology and nature. Because then you can have the situation as, for example, people would do in Hawaii, that the child grows up into adolescent. As an adolescent, they then have the development of the baby as a partner to their learning. And then in adulthood, had that process of experiencing a child actively and passively is concluded, and that's where people then do things in their society and for the world in general. And that is whereby their activities, farming, trading, cultural exchange, spiritual growth, they then contribute to their environment, but also to their offspring and their offspring's offsprings. And that means that you then have a society in which the care for the offspring comes from the adults. That they build the houses, that they build the infrastructure, that they build the quality of life together, and the political and religious life in which people can develop themselves and can develop each other, with each other. That is where then a growing up can take place of the society as a whole. So the children's handbook is not just looking at the growing up of the individual, but also growing up of the species. And in that sense, it's a fun project, because it really requires a rethinking, and most of the fun comes from the realization that how it works and how it can work is actually already built in our body, and the consciousness that we have in our body. The only thing that is needed is that we see how it relates to nature and how it relates to humanity, and then the cycles of life basically show themselves, and it is then possible for people to surf those waves of those cycles, to automatically with their children develop as they go from puberty to adulthood, and then with that wisdom of that own experience can start to participate in humanity and earth as a whole. So I'll just conclude the story here, that the Children's Handbook is basically an invitation for growing up.